everyone, to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson Maxwell, and joining me, as always...
Hey, everyone, it's your friendly neighborhood Nick Morris.
Your friendly neighborhood Nick Morris. He loves America. He's here to talk about some movies. So let's do that. Nick, how you been, man, this past week? What's going on?
Tired. I've been sleeping a lot, Grayson.
Sleep is good. I feel like you're... Like most other people this time of year, like getting sick because the weather's changing and people's sinuses are acting up and people are getting colds. I don't know, maybe you're getting sick.
It's crazy, man, this weather, you know, it's changing. I got the sniffles.
The sniffles?
Just ain't right, man.
It's just not right. Well, however the case, I hope this doesn't mean you're sick. That's, you know, being sick is miserable. So, anyway, so, Nick... Number one this week in the box office is no surprise. But before we get to that, I wanted to tease everyone with that. We have some cool stuff to talk about today. We have some more Terminator news, which, of course, I love. I think a lot of people do love this. I find the Terminator fan base is pretty big, I found out.
Oh, yeah.
We have some characters, some of the 10 greatest movie characters ever. A buddy of mine texted me a link, and I thought this was interesting to share on the podcast. So... I made a list of my own. All these characters, I made a list of my own list. We have a franchise. The last movie was in 1998. May come back, and we have a superhero movie spinoff that, while isn't confirmed, is all but confirmed. So here we go. Number one is teased. It should be no surprise to anyone this past weekend with Halloween is Jigsaw. With seven movies already under the belt, this is the eighth one. $10 million budget, not a huge budget. I would think it'd get a bigger budget based on how popular that franchise is, but I guess not.
And Saw's always been kind of simple, I guess, you know.
I love the first Saw. I love the first two Saws, then after that, I just kind of...
It gets a little too extreme.
I think...
Not in a bad way, though, but, like, it's a little less...
I think it just becomes too much.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost because, like, there was... I know the first Saw was 2004. That was the same year as Friday Night Lights. And then for the next, you know, couple years, there was almost one a year for several years. And it's almost like, really, another Saw movie? However, that's a testament to Lionsgate for being able to pump those out once a year. I mean, a movie is not an easy thing to have a script for. To shoot it, to edit it, to, you know, do advertising and get all that out within a year. That's pretty impressive, though.
Yeah, exactly. And shout out to the guys who made Saw. They were in film school, weren't they? Or something like that?
They were young. I don't know the stories on, but I know that, yeah, I know they were super young. But, I think the first one is, you know, I wrote sort of a paper in college about, you know, back in the days when everyone thought the Joker or the Dark Knight was just the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. I wrote a paper for a class about how I thought the Joker was not as... I didn't think the Joker was as interesting a villain as someone like Hannibal Lecter, you know, from Silence of the Lambs, or, you know, other villains. And I don't like omnipotent. The Joker seems omnipotent. He always knew every step Batman took, and he always knew exactly... He's always seven steps ahead of the police. I don't know, that kind of evil isn't as fun to me because it's almost unfair, but...
Yeah, he has the advantage of planning, I guess, where Hannibal Lecter or, Jigsaw would kind of just wait and see what happens and then adjust.
Yeah, that's what they would do. And what my point is, I thought the Jigsaw from the first Saw was right up there with Hannibal Lecter as far as a brilliant villain until they just, more movies, they try to, I mean, they just... They took it too far, and they just ruined. Yeah. They ruined a really cool character. So, I don't know. That's just my thing on Saw. But shout out to Jigsaw for taking up number one this past weekend. And guess what's number two, Nick? You love this movie.
Boo 2.
Tyler Perry's Boo 2, A Madea Halloween. Yes, sir. $25 million. So far has made worldwide $35 million. So it's right up there with now being 100% profitable. We'll see. You know, given this, the fact that Halloween is this week, it's Tuesday. The 31st is Tuesday, so that may be that may we may see an increase in box office for these Halloween movies. Hopefully so. I can't see one for personally me. I don't really see the appeal to Tyler Boo or Tyler Perry's Boo 2, but I saw the first one. I'm like, what is this? But
I mean, it's certain. It's a unique movie, and I'm sure a lot of people go enjoy it. But
well, no, it's certainly got its fan base. I saw the first one, thought it was cool. I didn't know how they were. I didn't. I never would have thought they would've, that he would have made a second, what he did. But that's okay. Geostorm. Well, I have loads to say about this movie. Geostorm. Number three this week. $120 million budget, 136 worldwide. And I tell you what, I was last week. It was a weekday showing. It was a 9:45 show at one of the theaters here in town, and it was almost sold out.
Oh, wow.
I think it was a Wednesday night. It was almost sold out. I mean, the auditorium was enormous, so there's probably and they have those. It was an AMC with those reclined seating, so you sit down and there's a button on the side of the chair that like
That
reclines
you
all the way
put feet
back.
up.
Yeah. So I mean, there's only like there's at most maybe 120 seats, but it was damn near sold out, and I was hoping it was gonna sell out. I'm like, wow, this is kind of cool because everyone's giving this movie such negativity. I haven't heard one good thing to say about it around the office I'm working in. Everyone's just kind of what because now everyone asks me what I'm talking about this week, and I say, you know, Geostorm's one of them. They're like, why? It's like, well, listen to the podcast, you'll know. I really enjoyed it. But number four this week, which number three last week, it fell one spot. Happy Death Day. So Nick. You want to go? Okay, so it's you want to try again. Off of a $4.8 million budget, guess what it's at now?
Oh man. Is it I don't want to be wrong. I'm gonna say 124 million.
No, way south of that. I'm gonna give you another try. Way south of that.
Oh man. 70.
Close, 68.5. So,
Okay, all right.
yeah, that's a pretty, that's a damn good return for a $4.8 million budget. So,
Yeah, that's not bad.
we can certainly expect another one. I'm sure another Happy Death, another movie by the same studio next year, trying to find another low budget idea to milk for all it's worth. Blade
Happy
Runner.
anniversary day.
That's right. Blade Runner 2049 is number five, the brilliant movie. As you know, the budget is 150 million. So far, worldwide, 223. So I think it's probably right around cover the production budget and the advertising budget. I hope so. I hope we see if we're gonna see another one. If they plan to see another one, I hope we see it. Based on, I mean, it's that's a damn good movie.
It really is. It really
That's
is.
number five this week. Number six, Thank You for Your Service came out this past weekend with Miles Teller, who's in one of the movies we're talking about today. $20 million budget, only has a domestic box office total of 3.7 million. Not good. Not a good start. Not a good start.
Certainly not. Oh, man. That
Only
is
not good.
interesting.
That's not good.
No.
For a movie that I think, you know, from the trailer, it certainly struck me as, boy, that movie wants to win Oscars for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd think a lot of people would maybe flock to it. If you've been in the military or if you're a fan of war movies or something, you might check it out.
Yeah, that's I'm very excited. I haven't caught it yet, but I'm very excited to see this one. I had a very busy weekend at the time, but very excited. Only the Brave, number seven this week. 38 million production budget. So far only made 12 million. Not good. Not good for a very emotional movie. It's a true story though.
To say the least, yeah, exactly.
It's a very true story. So that's what makes it even more. I tell you what, I'm not gonna reveal anything, but the last maybe 10 minutes, my hand was over my mouth like the whole time, like I couldn't believe what I had just seen. That's oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. This has been an emotional couple of weeks with Only the Brave and with Breathe. It's been an emotional few weeks for me, as far as movies are concerned. The
I had more than one subtle tear watching this movie, so I felt it.
Good. Well, I'm glad that they certainly deserve to be remembered. The Granite Mountain,
Much
the Granite Mountain Hotshots. The Foreigner, number 8 this week. Jackie Chan, $35 million budget, 117. Jeez, that movie just keeps making money. I think it's Jackie Chan pulling everyone in.
Yeah, definitely.
Honest to God, I think it's Jackie Chan. But yeah, either way, good for that movie. I didn't really like it, but I did love Jackie Chan punching people in the face and kicking people and making MacGyver bombs, and that's always fun. Suburbicon, number 9 this week. No budget given, domestic total of less than $3 million, 2.8. Not good. Not good at all. But that may not be as widely released as we're used to. And number 10, a good movie to round out the top 10 for the Halloween weekend. And I expect it to be a lot higher on the list, It.
Yeah, especially, during October.
But, Nick, this is probably going to be your last week to take a guess. $35 million budget, where do you think it's at now? And the number, you're not even going to believe it. I just gave it away, but a Halloween movie at this number, just incredible.
$350 million?
No, 666.
Oh, word.
I know.
That's so gnarly, Grayson.
That's kind of cool. You know, I wonder at what point the people who report this were like, okay, it's at 666. We have to stop counting for it right now.
We have to stop counting.
That's awesome. Okay. Good for it.
Money. Wow, that is incredible. That's interesting.
Some of the movies of note, rounding out down to 20, American Made, still number 12. The Kingsman, number 14. We have The Mountain Between is number 15. Ooh, The Snowman, number 17. Not a strong showing for The Snowman. And My Little Pony is 19. Nick, I'm sorry. Your best picture movie didn't do too well anymore.
No.
All right.
Now we have Rainbow Sparkle Dust. I don't know. I forgot.
Berry Pop Fizzle Twix or something. I don't remember how. We have this week that came out. We had Jigsaw, Thank You for Your Service, Suburbicon, All I See Is You. Opening November 1st, A Bad Mom's Christmas. November 3rd, Big Week, Thor, Ragnarok, and The Killing of a Sacred Deer. November 10th, Daddy's Home 2, Mel Gibson, and Murder on the Orient Express. November 17th, Justice League, Wonder, The Star, and Roman J. Esquire. I'm willing to bet that week belongs to Justice League. I can't imagine. And maybe Wonder might do some business, and Denzel might pull some people in. But that movie belongs to that week belongs to Justice League.
Also, a quick note for November 3rd. I mean, we got Thor Ragnarok and Killing of a Sacred Deer. I was streaming on, going around on Twitter, and I saw Aaron Paul tweeted about Killing of a Sacred Deer. Said it's really good. Insanely good, but I mean, we'll see. Obviously,
Aaron Paul is in what's the show? He with Breaking Bad and Need for Speed.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's okay. Good for him. Aaron Paul tweeting. Good for him. Now, November 24th, we have anywhere from the 22nd to 24th. Coco, The Darkest Hour is limited. The Man Who Invented Christmas comes out limited. The Current War and Polaroid was pushed back all the way to now. I don't think that's the greatest time to release a horror movie, but they may not have had a choice.
Yeah. So,
and then December 1st, He's Out There and Wonder Wheel. Now, the countdowns are fun. Thor, we're 1 week away from Thor. That's actually this Friday. Daddy's Home 2, we're 2 weeks away. Justice League, we're 3 weeks. Coco, Darkest Hour, and The Man Who Invented Christmas, we're a month away. And He's Out There, we're 5 weeks away. So that's some of the bigger upcoming ones.
Those are some big movies, man.
I think so. Those are some exciting ones.
Some big weeks.
And this, I was very happy to see this. I think the first two movies in this franchise are some of the best action movies I've ever seen. Lethal Weapon 5 may be on the docket for Richard Donner. And, of course, that's Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. I'm getting too old for this shit. They really are getting too old for this now. I mean, that was Danny Glover's line. He's getting too old for this, but
are they reprising their roles?
Yes, they are reprising their roles.
Oh man!
Yeah, I'm super excited. You know all this. You know Cameron bringing back Terminator. You know the Alien franchise getting looked at again. You know Lethal Weapon 5 coming back. Good for these older directors, like really bringing back their franchises. That's really exciting to see.
Oh yeah, Exactly, and you know they'll give their own, they'll give their personal touch, just like they did before, with their originals. But it'll be nice to see, you know, what if they have any changes or something new that they've added. So yeah, that's exciting to see.
I really think Riggs, Mel Gibson's character Martin Riggs, was always a very, to me, he was one of those characters, like, I saw it super early on in my life, and, like, it just stuck with me as far as, like, studying film, like, writing. Riggs' character was a wounded soldier whose arc actually comes to an end, well, comes to an end at the end of two. You know, it starts at the beginning of one. He's, you know, he's homicidal, he's angry, he's just lost his wife, he's really struggling. Then he gets a new partner, they become friends, and then the second one, he's able to confront his wife's killers. Turns out he was part of a much bigger plan, and it's just the intensity he brings at a certain points in that movie is just, that's what I love about Mel Gibson. He brings this intent, and of course he's built a career off of revenge movies. You know, of course, you know, he's the Lethal Weapons, you know, the Braveheart, Payback. They're all about a man getting revenge, and that's most of his movies are about those. So he's built a career around that. And more on the Terminator front, this is a very vague, a vague article, but Arnold Schwarzenegger talks, he was saying that it's not been confirmed that they are continuing after Judgment Day and scrapping 2 and 3, and that, or sorry, 3 and on. It hasn't been confirmed like 100% yet, but Arnold was talking in an interview, and it says, he was talking about how there's more life to be told in T-800, and the events after the character. He talked about the characters after Judgment Day, Linda Hamilton's character Sarah Connor, and the Terminator. It's looking like that might be the truth, that we just completely eliminate anything after two. So that's cool. He says there's a lot of stories still to be told with the very vulnerable. I used the word vulnerable that they use in the T-800.
That's an interesting word choice.
Especially with the Terminator, because Terminators are anything but.
Yeah, exactly.
But the limit, he said, he went on to say that the limitations make it interesting, always having the T-800 going up against much more advanced, bigger, badder Terminators. And it does. You force your character to figure out ways to survive. So that's always fun.
Grayson, I gotta ask you, man.
What's up?
When is the Terminator gonna be real? When are we gonna be fighting the machines, man?
To be honest, if I woke up tomorrow and all over the internet was, well, not the internet because Skynet owns the internet, but all over the news was Skynet has taken over, I'd be so happy. I can't even tell you how happy I'd be.
Grayson, I gotta be honest, man. There's this AI called Sophia. I watched this over the week. And it's a robot. Well, it's AI, technically. And, you know, it can think for itself. It can move. It could obviously not feel, but it can have its own expressions. And Saudi Arabia has given it citizenship.
That's kind of cool.
Is that crazy?
That's really cool, though. I mean, that's a step forward in the right direction. I mean,
very true.
We're several years behind. I mean, we were promised flying cars in the year 2000, damn it. It's 2017. I've still not seen a flying car. So I want to see a flying car. I want one right now. But no, I mean, that's a step in the right direction. Although, the more advanced robots get, the more jobs are going to be cut out. Because they're going to be doing jobs like, I assume they're going to start at places like a fast food restaurant, like making fries or like some, you know, simple jobs. And what do people do that... Then of course you don't have to hire many workers, and then jobs just go down. But I mean, that's been the debate for years now about robots. So
that's true.
We'll see how that works. I mean, we're several years away, I think, before Skynet. I mean, I hope Skynet happens soon. I would love to be a part of Skynet. Oh boy, that'd be fun. And I think a lot of people are gonna like this next one. I think you will like it, Nick. There's a Logan spinoff coming.
Mm-hmm.
Now James Mangold. It's not confirmed whether he will direct again, but there's definitely a movie in the works. focusing on X-23, which was the little girl that Logan was trying to protect. And as of right now, there's no Hugh Jackman, but I would not be surprised if by the time this movie was released, Hugh Jackman is back in the role of Wolverine. I don't know how they do it because he's dead, but...
I really like that. I like how they're making an X-23 movie. I think that's a step in the right direction for X-Men because the relationship between her and Logan by the end of the movie, you know, we were definitely feeling it.
I think so, yeah.
I like that. I had a theory, Grayson.
Here we go.
On a way that that they could bring back the Wolverine. If not Hugh Jackman, someone else. But he was an Avenger, right? So would after these Avenger movies end and, you know, all these stars are done with their contracts and if they don't join back up, could they write an Avengers movie with said Logan coming in as a leader?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because we were having a conversation in the office about it. I had to Google it really quick because I thought Logan was one of the first Avengers, but I'm wrong. Logan does not become an Avenger until way into the Avengers, like way into the comics, after the introduction of the Avengers. So maybe that's Spider-Man Logan. The lore on superhero comics is, or comic heroes is really kind of iffy for me. I only know what I know from the films, but...
Mm-hmm.
That'd be really cool if they were somehow able to write him in. I think they have a lot of star power right now. So maybe once people start like, you know what, I don't want to do it anymore. They can like, no, let's bring Hugh Jackman back. So we'll see how that goes. But Hutch Parker, he's a producer on the X-Men, on the main X-Men series movies. So it may not be the same tonally. It may be very different, but there's still story there left to explore. There's still characters yet to introduce and to you know, we can live vicariously through them. There's lots of avenues they can pursue, but I like the idea that the little girl that Wolverine was protecting and now has learned that ferocity, that Wolverine instinct to kill.
Yeah,
I mean they could still be being hunted. So there's definitely a story like that to tap into. So that's pretty cool. I really hope that is a thing. I really hope Hugh Jackman is back in the role of Wolverine soon because he was awesome at Wolverine.
Just a nice little cameo at the end, maybe. I'm back.
And a friend of mine texted me a link to an article on Cinema Blend that lists the 10 greatest movie characters of all time. And this is just a list off of an internet site, so it's no way by no means definitive. But this is a list. You may agree with it, you may not agree with it. Now, from number 10 to 1, 10 being the least popular, 1 being the most popular. Princess Leia, number 10. Number 9, Joker. Number 8, Gandalf. Number 7, Hannibal Lecter. Number 6, Travis Bickle, Taxi Driver. Number 5, James Bond. Number 4, Ellen Ripley from Alien. Number 3, Han Solo. Number 2, Batman. Number 1, Indiana Jones. That's a good list. I can't say I agree with it.
Where's Marty McFly, honestly?
Where's Marty McFly? Where's Wolverine? You know, as far as he's been in so many of those X-Men movies, where is he? So we'll see how that shakes out. But I just took a little brain exercise from 10. To 1, here are mine. I have reasons for them. 10, I don't think Leia should be on this list. There are a lot more Star Wars characters that deserve to be on the list before Princess Leia. But Princess Leia.
Yeah.
Then I have James Bond, Hannibal Lecter. Number 7, Travis Bickle, Taxi Driver. Number 6, Batman. Number 5, Joker. Number 4, Gandalf. Number 3, Ellen Ripley. Number 2, Han Solo. Number 1, Indiana Jones. I agreed with Indiana Jones being number 1.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty solid number 1 too.
He's a very iconic.
Yeah.
And always fun. He's got that cool whip. He's got a gun. He's got a hat. His dad's Sean Connery. I mean, what more can you want? You know.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good list. I just wanted to make a quick little list of my own, but that's a good list. Now, Nick, we have some good trailers to talk about today.
Yes we do.
Downsizing. with director Alexander Payne, who also did, if you've seen these, Nebraska, Descendants, and Election. Those are all pretty good movies. As a matter of fact, Nebraska and Descendants were both Oscar nominations for Best Picture, and Election's a damn good movie. Matt Damon, Kristen Wiig, Christoph Waltz, and Hong Shao. I like this trailer because it's I don't think I've ever seen a movie like this before. Like,
yeah, it's very interesting. It really is.
It's kind of an innovative idea, really, although there may be source material for this. But the idea of the story is I think, pretty innovative.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Damon and his wife volunteer for this program called Downsizing, where they are trying to fix, they as in we are trying to fix a problem of overpopulation and convincing people to go to this tiny town and converting their life savings to an astronomical number so they'll probably never need anything in this town again. And there's several very clever moments in this trailer. For instance, when after they've been downsized and they're scooping them off off the table with like a cookie scoop, you know, like a spatula you'd use to scrape off like a done chocolate chip cookie. I thought that was pretty clever. And of course, when Matt Damon wakes up for the first time, he checks under the covers and then does a sigh of relief when he's okay down there. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was very funny.
I think Kristen Wiig is the one that stands out for me as odd.
Yeah, especially during the trailer because do we see her downsize in the trailer?
Well, I mean, we do see her. You know, I don't think we do actually. Good point. Good point. I would never even thought of that. I don't think we do. It just doesn't seem like a movie that Kristen Wiig. I would see her name attached with. I guess I'm trying to say is. She usually sticks to, you know, comedies.
Mm-hmm.
No, she's not exclusively comedies. I just never would have picked her for this movie. As far as off a list of, oh, who's in this movie about this? I never would have, oh, Kristen Wiig could do that. Like, I just never would pull it off. But
I'm going to go with what you're saying is, I'd like to be a fly on the wall in this when they're talking about this movie.
In those conversations, yeah. Like, when they're like, nope, cast this man. Oh, it'd be so awesome to be in that room. Or just to be the assistant of someone who makes the casting decisions. That'd be so cool, you know?
This trailer's definitely interesting. And, God, I don't know, would you downsize yourself, Grayson?
Here's the thing, in the trailer, I forgot to mention, at least in the trailer, it's made very clear this process cannot be reversed.
Yes.
So once you do it, it's done. You're downsized forever. I don't know, that'd be some serious consideration.
It's a life-changing moment, man.
It really is, but it's...
Literally.
There's a little question you can ask yourself until this movie comes out in 2018. You can just have fun taking 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. Would you want to be downsized to I think it's 1/64th of yourself?
Mm-hmm.
It's some astronomically small number. But it's... Would you be okay with being downsized, knowing you went to this special town built for you, almost a town of kings, built for kings... And you had all the money you could ever need. Would you do it? Watch the trailer and you find out. The next trailer we have is the last Justice League trailer, which I think is pretty fantastic.
Ooh, it looks good.
It does. And Zack Snyder is making this movie. But if you remember, see, Zack Snyder for me, he's Nolan's boy. He's, you know, a protege of Christopher Nolan. But it's weird for me because Snyder did 300, which was a damn good movie. 300 for what it was. Very good movie. An extremely strong narrative line. I think that's owed to the fact that they were just... It involved them starting one place, and then it involved them marching to the gates and holding the gates. There was not... Like, they didn't go back and forth. Like, that's where they were. It was a very simple narrative line that just was very powerful. So, 300 was good. Watchmen had some issues. Sucker Punch was not good. Man of Steel received a lot of negative criticism. Batman vs. Superman, I think we can all remember that was not well received either. So he's had out of the five I mentioned, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he's had one good out of five. Why he keeps getting this position of director, that's a good call. There's got to be some things going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
To be a fly on the wall.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
So Justice League, Gal Gadot is reprising as Wonder Woman. Robin Wright and Antiope. I probably butchered that name. Antiope or Antiope. Jason Momoa, Connie Nielsen, Amy Adams. I stopped naming their characters because you know who the characters are. Ben Affleck, mm-hmm. Ezra Miller, Amber Heard, Henry Cavill, Diane Lane, Kiersey Clemons, Billy Crudup, J.K. Simmons, Cyrian Hines, Jeremy Irons, Jesse Eisenberg, Stissen, Ray Fisher, Aaron Blevins, Lisa Kongsley, Michael McKelton, Samantha Jo, and Joe Morton. Now that is a hell of a cast.
It really is.
This is going to be a fun movie, I'll tell you what.
As much as I like Jesse Eisenberg, I still don't agree with him being the psycho, you know. Well, I can't even think of his name.
Lex Luthor?
Yes, Lex Luthor. Check out Batman vs. Superman.
Well, that's just, not... You share a common thought that a lot of people... I mean, they didn't... From what I remember after seeing that movie is people did not like him as Lex Luthor. So, I mean, you didn't like him as Lex Luthor, right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so you share that with a lot of people. But there are those who did. So, it goes both ways. But
true.
Off of this list, that's a hell of a list, man.
It really is.
I'm really excited. I'm excited to see the Superman story play out a little more because it's Superman, as you know, he's gone for right now. But what's interesting about this trailer is how it starts. And how it starts is, you know, Amy Adams, she's Lois Lane. She wakes up, goes outside, and it's that wonderful, you know, 20 minutes before sundown. It's the sky, you know, shades of pink, orange, blue, red, yellow. It's wonderful color. And the music, which... I think the strongest part of Man of Steel was the ending when he's talking to his mother and then you see the shot of him playing with the dog in the yard and
mm-hmm.
his father fixing a truck and looks up and looks down and looks up again seeing a superhero. Even as a kid, he's seeing Clark Kent as Superman.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's one of my... And the music that's playing is wonderful and that's how they start this trailer. Amy Adams walks out with the ring on. He says, "You're wearing the ring. So you said yes." And of course, then she comes back to reality. He's gone. I love how that starts. So automatically it starts. It's like, not all is well in Tinseltown.
Yeah, exactly.
And Batman talks about an invasion. And then there's a line which I love. "A strong man is strongest alone." So we'll see how that one plays out. Because obviously we're seeing a theme here of, you know, the individual versus the pack and strength versus a united strength. One of the next lines in the trailer you can hear, "Divided we are not enough." So you know they're gonna have to. I mean, you know they band together. I mean, that's the Justice League is a band of together heroes. But and there's also the David Bowie song "Heroes." You're right there, Nick. You seem like you're dying.
Yeah. Sorry. Excuse me.
And I love that the David Bowie "Heroes" song, which I think fits right in with the trailer pretty well. So.
Yeah, I like this trailer, and I mean, it's one of the movies that I'm pretty excited for, just because it just, I mean, Justice League is, you know, it's huge.
Yeah, very.
I mean, yeah, a lot of people are looking forward to it, you know, and maybe some new fans, old fans definitely.
It's about time. I mean, there's two Avengers movies, the third one being shot, so it's about time there's a Justice League movie.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited to see, this is Momoa's... This is his basically his first movie as the character
of Aquaman.
Aquaman, yeah, right.
And he was Game of Thrones. He was, what's his name? I can't remember his name in Game of Thrones.
In Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still trying to catch up. I want season 1, episode 1.
Well, he was the. I forgot about that. Yeah, he's he's Khal Drogo. That's his name, Khal Drogo. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So he's Aquaman. I'm a little mad that Aquaman, they didn't include Aquaman from, was that in the show where James Cameron was making Aquaman the entourage?
Yes.
Vinny Chase, you know, yeah, I'm a little mad, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So look forward to that, Jared. That's the final Justice League trailer, so that you cannot go wrong with that. And then...
True.
Star Wars, oh boy, the last This is the last trailer before release. I hope it's the last trailer. Returning to Star Wars, Daisy Ridley, she's Rey. Tom Hardy, again, he has an uncredited stormtrooper. I don't know if that's really... I mean, we'll see how that plays out. But Billy Lord, Domhnall Gleeson, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Andy Serkis, Gwendolyn Christie, Adam Driver, Joseph Gordon-Levitt for his voice, Oscar Isaac, John Boyega, Justin Theroux, Benicio Del Toro, Laura Dern, Warwick Davis. That's a pretty good cast too, man. I mean,
yeah,
so much money flying around these casts. Jeez. I always wonder why Mark Hamill never did more than what he did.
Yeah.
But
did you say Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
There, yes, he has a voice credit.
Okay.
So maybe he's voicing, he may be voicing one of the people that never takes off their helmets.
Yeah.
So, that'd be pretty cool. This is directed by Rian Johnson. And what I think is, the thing that I want to talk about here are, of course, you see Rey in her training, and Luke is training her. And while she's training, she's very powerful. You can tell there's rocks moving when she's really getting into her training. Looks like she's going to be a powerhouse. There's a line, Snoke's talking about fulfilling your destiny, and he's like holding the camera's tight on his face, and he's like, he's doing some Sithy thing. It looks like he's got Rey powerless, so we'll see how that plays out. And then what I think is more interesting is the last few seconds before we see the Star Wars lettering come up is Ren offering Rey a hand as she says she needs someone to show her her place in all of this, and then Kylo Ren extends a hand. So
yeah, that's interesting.
I agree.
I mean, not all. I mean, some trailers can be misleading or, get you thinking about the movie that's going to come in the next couple months. Obviously, Star Wars, this is exciting. It's happening, man. It's getting to that time, around Christmas time. Last year, of course.
It was in 2000. It wasn't. The Force Awakened was not last year. That was 2015? 16?
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was 2015 or 16. Yeah, it was definitely not last year, but.
Where have I been?
Last year was Rogue One.
Oh yes, yeah. That's
so,
right.
I was Episode 7. I was very overcritical on. I will admit I was way too critical on 7. But I feel like a big franchise like Star Wars, you need to be critical on it. It's one of those ones that should be handled with the utmost care. One of maybe a dozen or two dozen franchises that needs full force of the studio behind it to not mess up the characters, not mess up the lore. So,
yeah, exactly. I totally agree with you.
I don't think 7 did a great job of continuing where the story maybe should have gone. I try not to say that as if like what I'm thinking is the only way, but I know there are a lot of people who have certainly, because people do love Star Wars, they have certainly thought of, oh man, this is what I would do if I was going to make 7, this is what I'd do. And I don't think the direction he went in, I don't think that was any of those people's imagination. So
yeah, I mean it'd be interesting to see a Star Wars fan theory or someone's movie that they would like to shoot. It would certainly be interesting to see their vision on some
it's interesting to see like people drum up treatments of where the story they think story should have gone, and characters that came back, characters that obviously died, characters that lived. That would have been fun, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we're past that now. We're already two movies into a trilogy, so whatever's going to happen has already been set up. So those are some good trailers. Now, talking about some movies, The Snowman. The Snowman, indeed.
Snowman.
Michael Fassbender, Rebecca Ferguson, Charlotte Gainsbourg, Jonas Carlson, Ronan Vibbert, J.K. Simmons, Val Kilmer, Toby Jones, all in this movie. James Darcy as well. This is kind of an odd one for me. I went back and forth on this one for a while, but I mean, I'm still kind of in my head. This is Authorities investigate the disappearance of women with only the mark left behind of a snowman at the crime scenes. And here's the thing about the snowman. It's not scary at all.
No.
So I'm talking about the snowman he leaves behind.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's not menacing, it's not, it's something like, think about that little jigsaw doll on the tricycle.
Yeah.
From Saw. That's terrifying. Like, that is terrifying. Snowman, I mean, it wasn't, I'm aware there's more of a significant impact as far as symbolism goes. I get that. I thought that was a weird choice going with the snowman, but it's also a source material, so.
Mm-hmm.
But the art design of the snowman, I thought, could have been improved. Maybe look a little like Jack Frost, that movie with, who's in that? Is that Michael Keaton?
Like
an evil snowman. Yeah, I mean, that would have been pretty cool.
He was an evil man. Jack Frost was the dude.
Was he the dude, though? Was he? Wait, wasn't there a movie? Maybe it wasn't Jack Frost.
There's two Jack Frosts. There's one scary one. But the one with Michael Keaton was...
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm wrong.
Family friendly.
Okay, I'm wrong then. Okay. I meant the scary Jack Frost. But
scary Jack Frost.
The main character, Michael Fassbender, he is Harry Hole. He's not as interesting only because he is exactly how you figure his character to be. He's a mess trying to get his life back on track. He can't really do that. He's always one step behind, which is, you know, he's pretty much on par with every other person ever trying to solve these murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
I did like Fassbender. Fassbender's always great.
Yeah.
The opening,
very, very true.
The opening scene, I think, is what, you know, an opening scene really sets the tempo and the pace for the film. It really, what you get in that opening scene sets the entire, you know, stage and sets the entire pace for the rest of the movie. And this opening scene is a policeman pulls up to a house out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. As you can see, he's, you know, you see the mountains behind him and the roads that just, they just go nowhere. I mean, they go somewhere, but, like, you just see nothing other than wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And he sits down, and he's asking a boy questions that he's unable to answer, and the policeman gets very upset when he cannot answer them, and the whole thing spirals out of control. He ends up leaving. The boy and his mom, they follow him, and then something I don't think would, I kept trying to find a scenario when this is acceptable, is since it's the first few minutes of the movie, I guess I don't feel bad, but since she is in this conundrum where she wants to tell the policeman's wife that it's the son is the boy is his. I mean, obviously she wants to, and the guy just leaves. He's so mad. So when they can't catch him, she just kind of drives on the ice and just drowns in this car. Which,
God.
I think is weird, because I just don't think a person would do that. I can't even put myself in her shoes. I mean, I'm trying to put myself in her shoes as she's distraught. She doesn't know what to do. I'll just drown in this lake. That's what
that seems very dramatic.
I mean, given her mindset, anyone who's just distraught might think of something like that. But I just thought that was kind of out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're source material, so I understand that. But that kind of just... It just didn't strike me as real. I mean, there's a way you can shoot things, or the way you can set it up and write it, that would make it a little more real. That's just the way that it just didn't strike me as real, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But that sets the tone for the rest of the movie. It provides motivation, given the person being motivated, it I can definitely see the motivation provided. I love the cinematography. It's always very cold looking. At times, very blue. It's, you know, very bleak. I was sitting in the theater, like, it wasn't cold, but, like, I felt colder by watching this movie, because it's always cold outside in this movie. It's always like a blue hue to the screen. It's always very cold. You know, I like the cinematography. I love the cinematography. I love the shot choice at some it's at sometimes it was the shot choice it's very close up to a character, so you're really kind of in that person's mind at the time. In other ways, it's very traditional fixed camera placement, so it goes kind of like one extreme to the other. So I do enjoy the camera work in this movie. Val Kilmer, can you talk about Val Kilmer for a second? Val Kilmer, his character. Let me tell you something. I was excited to see Val. I'm always excited to see Val Kilmer in something, because
it's always interesting.
He's one of those guys from the '90s that could have been a megastar that just fizzled out.
Yeah.
You know, just didn't. He had every. He was in a number. You know, he was in the '90s. He was in like a ton of movies. And then he just after that, gone. Like just erased from history for a while. One of the guys that just didn't survive. So anytime I see someone like, you know, Val Kilmer is one of those guys from the '80s and '90s that could have been, but.
I mean, he was Iceman in Top Gun, you know.
And Top Gun 2 has been announced, so.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing. Actually, I know a buddy who's going to work on that, and I'm hoping to get on that myself. I'm crossing two fingers, so. So that's really cool, but. It takes place across the over the pond, and you know, not in the United States, just in Europe. So things are different. Kind of, you gotta have to like get in that mindset that it's not how we are customs here in the United States. It's very different. You know, they take trains everywhere, and which is cool because like we don't have any trains here in the United States, which I think we should need more of definitely. But
oh yeah.
I do like the cast. I do. I don't. It's hard to talk about the movie without revealing stuff because even at incremental, you know, steps in the movie, you're revealing something every time. That's what I do. I'm trying hard not to reveal anything to anybody so they can still, you know, enjoy this if they have not seen it.
Mm-hmm. It's very nice of you.
Well, same with Happy Death Day. Like a movie like The Foreigner, I don't mind talking about because it's not really spoiling anything. I mean, it's. But a movie like this, where you could potentially ruin the entire movie by, you know,
by just giving it away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel you. I feel you. I mean, no one wants to give out spoilers.
No. I mean,
I think that's the last thing we want to do, especially.
Especially a movie like The Snowman. I totally don't want to do that. But
mm-hmm.
Fassbender, I think, is the only. Well, no, I take that back. Fassbender and J.K. Simmons. Are two of the best things in this movie. Fassbender's always great. He's always wonderful. J.K. Simmons is always good. Those are two very accomplished, you know, I mean, I would still call them young men. I mean, they're not, I don't think they're like super old, but they're very accomplished young men. I'm not young in like 20s, but like young in like, not like 60, I guess, but.
Yeah, they still got time to make some pretty bomb-ass movies.
Yeah, no, they're very strong, very. They're very solid actors. They're very, very good choices. I would get excited when they're in something. I like J.K. Simmons. I loved him in. What was that, the movie about the drum? About the Miles Teller's drummer?
Whiplash.
Oh, my God.
I love that movie.
That was so good. Oh, boy. I loved J.K. Simmons in Whiplash. He was a perfect villain, man. He was awesome.
He really was. He played the part.
Excellent. Oh, boy. The Snowman, I would definitely say watch this one. It's better than your average murder mystery, I think. Because it's got more of an intelligent script. I think they had a hard time putting it on the screen. That's kind of what I come to. That's my overall is maybe the problems that this movie has comes from the fact that they just had a hard time putting it from page onto the screen. Maybe that's just me, but I mean I could that's my. That's the kind of what the vibe I walked away from. They just had a lot of trouble putting it on screen, but I've grown accustomed to, and what I like about this one is there's a lot of misdirecting in this movie, a ton of it actually. But it's not purposeful, as if like if you watch a lot of films like this, you can spot the misdirection pretty easy. And in this one, it's tough to. Because they give a very compelling argument for a lot of different people of who they could, why this person could be it. And they build a lot of. At one point in the film, they're maybe the last, say 20 minutes, or there's like three. There's three story threads that are building all towards someone that could be, the snowman killer, And that's what I thought. It was really cool how they ended up building all these different, like, dramatically building it up slowly. I'm like, well, that's pretty cool. I'm assuming you had better options this week, given how there was 7 movies out. Given how it didn't make a lot of money, I guess people thought that too. So, when I was in there, in my viewing, there was myself and several other couples, maybe 10 or 12 other couples, and by the hour mark, 6 of those couples had left and not come back.
Ooh.
So I don't know. I just took a note. After one left, I thought it might have been they got a text or a call or something. They had to go. Then the second one left. They didn't appear to be related because like they were all in different parts of the theater. But maybe they found the movie very boring. I mean, it doesn't move very quickly. But murder mysteries usually don't. So, given maybe they were expecting something else. Given the title, given the poster, they may have been expecting something else. I don't know. Does this movie pass the Netflix test? For me, no. It wouldn't. I would not watch this a second time. That's just my own personal Netflix test. I try to be as every man as possible when thinking about the Netflix test. Like, would someone like, oh yeah, they just got their pizza. Oh yeah, and snowman. Click play. Like, it's gonna be like, oh, I'm a snowman. Next. Scroll. So that is the snowman. Sure. Moving on to. Ooh. Geostorm.
Oh.
I'm laughing when I say Geostorm only because I really saw... This is the first movie in 2017 that I saw watching as a duty. As like... I was like, oh, God, I just want to get this over with. And I loved it.
Did you?
I was so entertained by this movie. Oh, my goodness. And the thing about this movie is... It's made to be, like, it's big budget. He didn't make it, but a Roland Emmerich, the guy who makes all those disaster movies. It's got all the elements in place. It's got the big sleeping score that cues up at the right moment when someone's giving their goodbye. You know, they're going to sacrifice themselves. You know, there's a car chase. There's, you know, likable characters. Though not, I mean, not the most well-written characters, but they're all likable because they're all, I mean... Once you get past the fact that everything in this movie is just happens so fast, everyone arrives at conclusions so fast. Anyway, I'll get into all that. But Geostorm with Gerard Butler, and I wanted going into this movie, the one line I wanted to hear was "This is Geostorm." I was so excited for that. I've been so excited for this for weeks. Just to hear that one phrase. Just that one phrase. Not the movie. Just to hear that one phrase. So, Gerard Butler. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Gerard Butler, Jim Sturgis, Abby Cornish, who's a badass.
Oh yeah.
Alexandra Mirlara, Daniel Wu, and there's one other one I wanted to mention. Oh, I'm sorry. A few others. Ed Harris, which I love. Andy Garcia, and Robert Sheehan. Love them.
Mm-hmm.
Mar Winningham is also in it. She's. I think fewer people would recognize her, but she's definitely a recognizable face. So Geostorm is two brothers must race against the clock to uncover and stop a plot to use a giant space station that is able to help control the weather from being used as a weapon. Just like it says, it is a race against time. Literally, it's a race against the clock. They're trying to do this before... Every country but the United States is wiped off the map. So, there's that. I'd like to start at the beginning. The opening narration is told by her daughter, or his daughter. So, right away, you kind of get that inkling that, well, if she's narrating, where is he? That's always the question, where is he, if she's narrating? I like that. I like Gerard Butler. It establishes real quick that Gerard Butler is the older brother... And the younger brother, Jim Sturgis, they have problems, man. They have major problems. They didn't used to, but they now have major problems. There's the younger brother who likes to follow the rules, likes to achieve, and the older brother, Gerard Butler, who doesn't do well with authority. He doesn't like to be told what to do. He views it as his space station rather than the government space station, even though he did have a hand in building it. He had a hand in designing it.
It's his baby.
It is his baby. It's a big baby, a very expensive baby. He doesn't take authority well. He doesn't take being told no very well. And of course, that's his arc that you know. I mean, if that's where his, that's where his character starts. You know where he'll be by the end. So that's
I love in the first 5 minutes, and it's from the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler. But when he goes into the courtroom, and they're like, let's just let everyone know that Jake Lawson has been late for an hour or so, however long he was late, and he's like, yeah, I literally flew in from space. I love that part.
Yeah, like I said, it's, well, that's, it's kind of having fun with the script.
Yeah,
it's kind of, you know, throwing these things in, that little lines that they're very funny. They're not the most well-written lines. They're not even well-delivered by Gerard Butler, but they're fun.
Yeah.
And that's what makes this movie fun, is you know what you're going in. This is absolutely a popcorn movie. You know, when you go watch this, please get a pretzel with some cheese, get a drink, get something to munch on, and just, you know, bucket of popcorn just to, you know, munch on. This is absolutely a popcorn movie, 100%. So then we kind of switch gears a little bit, going to this. We see this city in the desert. It's obviously a Middle Eastern city, and everyone is frozen solid completely. So something has malfunctioned with the space station that is able to control weather. Someone has unleashed. I mean, you're told right away there's some foul play here. It was not malfunction. It was someone did this. And they need to figure out who did this. It froze an entire town. A lot like, what's that movie with Jake Gyllenhaal from 2004, The Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah.
When you're in the eye of the storm, it's so cold, you just free, you know, the plane stopped. People just froze in their place when they were walking. Someone was feeding a dog. You can see the dog, like, jumping for a treat, and he's just frozen there. So that's pretty good. It's a pretty cool scene, though, how they, the camera, like, as they walk through, the camera's, like, weaving through it. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I thought Geostorm was, like, a little like Armageddon on drugs, to be honest.
I think Armageddon's, I go back and forth with this, because every time you bring up Armageddon and the Criterion Collection, when people are always very fiercely on one side or the other of, no, that does not belong on the Criterion Collection with the best movie ever made. I'm like, well,
it's a pretty good movie.
For what it is, it's a fun movie.
Exactly.
I mean, it is definitely a big-budget Michael Bay disaster movie. And the story behind that, at least what I heard, was one of his professors thought he was absolutely brilliant, and therefore she was also on the committee for the Criterion Collection when it first became a thing, and she thought he was just brilliant, and so she made a motion to put two of his movies in, which The Rock definitely deserves to be in the Criterion Collection. That's a damn good action movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best. But I mean, Armageddon's debatable. I would say yes because I love Michael Bay. I love him, so I would say yes. But not everything he does deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But
yeah exactly.
And one of my Go on, sorry.
You know what, Grayson? Abby Cornish, she got it.
Yeah, she's got it, man. Oh boy, she's feisty. She is a warrior, an Amazon warrior, let me tell you. And she's actually involved in one of my favorite scenes where she is part of the president's bodyguard team, guarding the POTUS, as she calls him, which is what the president is, the POTUS. And there's a scene in the hallway in the beginning with Jim Sturgis and her, and you have no idea that they're, like, you kind of, like, he's trying to be playful with her, and she's just not having any of it. And you're like, okay, well, he's trying to be with her. That's where you can walk away from the scene. And then 2 minutes later, they're going to sleep together. Like, not, like, sleep as in, like, passionate, but, like, sleep as in, like, they're getting the pajamas on, they're brushing their teeth, and they're, like, so they're a thing.
Getting ready for bedtime.
Which is what I love, because she was, boy, she was not having any of it. I mean, because she can't let on that they're seeing each other. The whole thing was, and to tell you many times, that they cannot, because they're both government employees, they cannot see each other.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly.
They got to do it in secret. That's what I love the Abby Cornish. I think her character might be my favorite character in this whole movie, is because she is badass.
Yes, she is, dude.
She's protecting the president. What I love about her is there's one scene where she's driving, there's a high-speed chase, and she's driving this car, and she can't get her pursuers off her tail, so she completely turns, she does this weird, like, she turns the car around and starts driving backwards and shoots the guys that are following her, the henchmen that are following them, and the president's in the back seat and looks at Jim Sturgess. This is after he just learned that they're seeing each other. And he says, marry her now.
And yeah, there was a complete 360 on the way the president was looking at that situation.
Yeah, I love it. That's.
But yeah, no, I love that part too.
Marry her now. It's the strength of a movie like this is it's purely just fun. It's made with that in mind. It's made with, this is absolutely a big blockbuster, a disaster movie. You have cool effects going on. You know, you have someone driving on the street when it's literally the street is erupting, and you're watching them weave through dead bodies already, and weave through dead like cars that are broken down and abandoned because they've been in. But like, that's enjoyable, regardless of who you are. Like, that's always fun to watch. It's a cool. There's tons of those cool acting sequences in this movie, and that's
and they keep you on the edge of your seat. To be honest,
I think that's one of the strengths of Geostorm is it's just so damn likable. That it's, you know, Gerard Butler, he's a discussion all in himself because he really, I mean, I love Gerard Butler, but I think that we've kind of moved past him as an action hero.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, you know, he was in 300, then he did a romantic comedy. Oh, The Ugly Truth and P.S. I Love You. Where he was the deceased, still sending letters to his alive wife. The Ugly Truth, Katherine Heigl, which people adamantly hate.
Man.
I've never heard anyone say a good word about it, The Ugly Truth. But there's that. And then he did Olympus Has Fallen some years later. I love Olympus Has Fallen. I really hated the second one, London Has Fallen, because it just seemed like he was phoning it in. And I know there's the third one announced now, so he's probably like, God damn it, have to do this again. Yeah, where's my $20 million? Where's my $20 million? Yeah, so he's a very likable character in this one, though. His him and his brother.
Yeah,
although Jim Sturgess looks all of 25, and he's in charge of this entire program. He looks a little young, but and everyone. The thing about a movie like this, like about a movie like Independence Day, about a movie like 10,000 BC is people jump to conclusions very quickly. That does happen a lot in Geostorm. Is people jump to conclusions very quickly and without any kind of logical thought. And I guess that's one of the weaknesses, but it's a weakness disguised as a strength because you're not really taking it seriously to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that plays to its strength. By the end of this movie, I was cheering. I had a smile on my face, really excited about this. Because, you know, one of my favorite things is redemption. And, of course, you see a character like Gerard Butler's character. He's just such a slime ball. Jake Lawson, such a slime ball in the beginning. And just you know he's going to – given that in the very beginning, he's like, no, that's my space station. If it goes down, I'm going down with it. Okay, well, that's the redemption, going down with space station. So,
Sorry, Jason. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's you always have that to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. There was a couple parts in the movie where, you know, obviously, Gerard Butler's Jake Lawson, he's all about the space station. You know, I built it, I know everything about it. But there's a couple times in the, when he's up there for, you know, when he's trying to save the world, he's going around the space station, opening these doors, and he's lost his way, you know. It's no longer, quote-unquote, his space station.
Well, yeah, when he's up there with especially that woman, he's like, it's in this door, and he tries a code, and she's like, things have changed, you've been going. And so he doesn't know his own invention. So, yeah, there's that. That's always... but that goes hand in hand with the character
mm-hmm.
of And of course, I mean, if you sit in the first 10 minutes of the movie, you know exactly every twist is coming. You might not see the person responsible for the geostorm, but you get a pretty clear idea pretty quick, or at least two or three different candidates that you can mark off one pretty quick, and you can mark off the other one 20 minutes later, so you have one only clear choice. But I mean, this Geostorm is as enjoyable a movie as you will see, as far as if you go in there expecting a fun movie with popcorn and a drink, it is 100% will deliver on that front. Otherwise, it doesn't really have a whole lot to offer as far as substance goes. As far as like looking at this movie as studying it maybe in a class, it really doesn't, but it's just fun. As some of the previously mentioned movies, in Independence Day, it's a B movie that's very much aware it's a B movie, and as a result, it's actually pretty good. The second one broke my heart that it wasn't, but I did really enjoy Independence Day, and that's, I almost made that Clark Hayes, but we're not there yet. I mean, we'll have a chance to put Independence Day on there, but moving on to Only the Brave, the last movie we're going to talk about this week.
Only the Brave,
boy oh boy. Starting to unpack this one. This has a hell of a cast, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Josh Brolin, Miles Teller. Miles is getting around these days. He's in a lot.
Hey, man. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Jeff Bridges. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. My beat.
Fair enough. Jeff Bridges, Jennifer Connelly, James Badgdale, Taylor Kitsch, Andy McDowell, Jeff Stoltz, Alex Russell, Thad Luckinbill. I almost said his name wrong. Bill Hardy. That's a good little, those are some good good names, some fun names. James Bagdale, Taylor Kish, Jeff Stoltz. All those three are always very fun to watch. Josh Brolin, boy, he's a hell of an actor. Miles Teller, hell of an actor.
Yep.
This is the story of. This is a true story, of the Granite Mountain Hotshots. And they're. They try to control and stop a wildfire and protect their small town. Raph, Nick, what do you give me your overall of this movie? That's how I want to start this.
My overall, well, first of all, Only the Brave was fantastic.
It was pretty good.
I don't know if it passed expectations for me. I think it was just right. Had a lot of realism for the working man. That needs a chance to make his life better for himself. And I wasn't ready for Miles Teller's character to be the way he was, but I'm glad the transition in the movie happened for him to make his life better.
I really liked how there were almost two main characters in this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you could put them together as one because they both were kind of what the other one wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You definitely saw a lot of similarities, but also the differences were clear.
I did like, one of the things I loved most about this movie was the brief glimpses into their souls you could see and certain scenes set up for this.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, for James, or for Brolin's character, You see in the beginning, there's a scene where he's in the kitchen with his wife. And it's a pretty routine morning. You know, they're getting ready. He's pouring coffee into his thermos. He's getting ready to go to work. And they have a nice little scene. You could tell they love each other very much. But there's some tension there. A little bit of, you know, they've been fighting for all over something.
You can cut the tension with a knife.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, honestly, you can tell they love each other. And you can also tell you're seeing into their souls when you see this scene, and it even gets even better later. But as a continuation, what I love most about her character, Jennifer Connelly's character of Amanda Marsh, Brolin's Eric Marsh's husband or wife she's married to two different men. She's married to Eric Marsh, the firefighter, and she's also married to Eric Marsh, but the majority of the time he is the firefighter. So she's married to the job. She's married to his job and him, and she does never. Her struggle is she doesn't see him as a husband as she wants to. He's always working. He's always concerned with his boys and, you know, getting ready for the next day, fighting fires. And as she says, she only gets 10% of him. That's not okay with her.
Yeah.
And these wonderful fights that you just. You see into their souls, and it's a rare thing to happen in movies. Is that two people play it off that well that you're really seeing raw and real emotion?
Yeah, exactly. I feel there was like you said, there's a lot of raw emotion in this movie. And a lot of things going on too.
The camera work, for example, it doesn't do a lot of super close work. But the few times that it is super close is when you're seeing these two people really trying to figure out what they have. Is it a marriage or is it a friendship with benefits? What is it? And it's especially in the beginning in the kitchen where you see how he's reassuring her that he loves her, and she's like, okay, well, I just want to make sure that you're mine and not you don't belong to the fire, you belong to me. Mm-hmm. Then you see it again when they have this enormous fight on the side of the road. When the camera is super up close and everything, you just see the emotion. And in the end, close to the end, when he comes after a very key scene, he comes to her in the bedroom, and I love the way it's lit. It's almost complete dark and complete light. Like there's almost nothing in between. And he pretty much gets on his knees, and she's sitting on the bed, and he's. I'm yours, you know. Whatever I am, whatever I was, I'm now yours. And like he is acknowledging that's, but the camera work is right there, and the only thing in the frame is his head on the left and her head on the right, and that's what I love. It's you're seeing right into it, and that's what I love the most about this movie is the humanity of these men, these incredible firefighters. You see the humanity, you see a sparkle of their soul. That's what I love the most about it.
These are a bunch of guys, you know, they're fighting fires, they're working together every day. They're joking around, they know each other's lives. I like, there was one part to me where I found it hilarious. I think it was, I think it was Mackenzie's character. Who was it?
Okay.
He was talking about this girl that he was with last night, and they started talking about Mount Rushmore. Oh, yeah. You remember that part?
Yeah.
And she, you know, this girl obviously, was, Lady of the Night, and
when they're asking him why he's not going to call her again, this is what he says. Go ahead.
He said that, she thought that. It was natural, you know. She said, "The wind and rain carved out our presidents."
Not Rushmore, yeah.
Not Rushmore. That is that. I started busting out laughing in the theater.
I mean, that's a good reason not to probably cut ties with someone. I mean, that's just I gotta say that's just dumb. But
yeah. Oh man, come on now.
I love to see the guys hazing each other in a loving way.
Yeah, exactly.
Miles Teller steps in when he's kind of, are introduced to him when he's on the couch, he's high. His friend tells him that the girl he was seeing for a while is pregnant. He has no money or anything to speak of. He has no money, no job, no future, no nothing. He goes to talk to her at a restaurant. He's high. He's leaning against a wall. He's trying to figure out what to do, what the right thing is to do.
It looks very dirty, too.
Yeah, unshowered, just unkempt. His hair is a mess. Obviously, been wearing that shirt for like 5 days. That's what I love about this character too. Is Brolin's character Eric is very organized. He's on top of everything. And Miles's character Brendan McDonough is the opposite of that. And that's they're two coins. There's the two sides of one coin here. Is like they make one character.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is interesting is. Because obviously, well, the tension between Eric and his wife is she now wants a kid and he doesn't. But they entered the marriage with the understanding that there was to be no kids, and they were both okay with it until recently when she wants a kid. And then Miles is kind of the son that he doesn't have. He really sees something in Brendan. He allows him to interview for the position, even though, he never in real life would have gotten an interview going in there dressed like he was, you know, but he, and then he has to follow them, and he has to, and he's puking the whole way up that run.
Huge mountain.
Granite Mountain. It's the thing about Miles Teller's character, Brendan, is that's the real to me, is that's like, because that's the character we are following, of course. Yeah. Because we're not all of us are fire. I mean, there are several of us who are firefighters, and like, but we don't, the majority of the people watching the movie don't, we get our information from Miles' character, Brendan, of what's expected, the training, you know, how he takes it. We kind of have to take it like that, because we, most of us are not firefighters. And he's learning to be one, so we kind of like, we're existing vicariously in that world through him. So that's what I really appreciated his character. It's kind of an odd one. It fits in well. I don't know how true the story is. Again, I had to do some research, and there might be some foul play behind why they were where they were, but why they are where they are at the end of the movie, who sent them there, who didn't allow them to come back. I was doing research on the online as I had to, and there's a lot of conspiracy theories behind it, and I don't know any of that, but it's Miles' character is kind of there so to give us the weight of what happens. It is a true story, so those two, especially when he says the name, when they finally get their certification and they become the Granite Mountain Hotshots, when he says the name, where the camera is placed, where how he is framed, and that you're supposed to be like, oh my god, we're watching the Granite Mountain Hotshots. I know what happened to them. Like, that was national news for a long time.
Some big news, very big news.
Very big news. So that's what that's why I appreciate the Miles character. Even though his character does exist, I don't know to what degree they made him as far as in the beginning, because in the beginning he was having a kid with someone who didn't want to talk to him, and he just wanted to be a good father because his parents were not good, or his father was not good to him, and he wanted to be better than his father was.
Yeah.
So again, there are always some creative liberties taken. But overall, this movie is extremely powerful. Oh, the ending, it just, oh my goodness. It builds and builds and builds and builds. And it's heartbreaking. It is just heartbreaking to watch how this plays out.
It really is, man. It's just, this movie definitely pulled on my heartstrings. If I wasn't in the theater, I probably would have shed more than two tears. But Grayson, I'm not lying to you. I literally had two tears coming out of my eyes. It was horrible. And I could hear other people. It's one of the first movies in a couple of weeks where there was more than just me in the theater. I could hear the sniffling, the people are definitely into this movie, and it definitely pulled on their heartstrings too.
I kind of have a link to what goes on. She's a flight nurse out west. With like guys like the Granite Mountain Hotshots, when they would get in dicey situations, she would be dispatched to go get them. So I asked her if she's seen. I said, "Hey, have you seen Only the Brave?" And she texted me back maybe 3 minutes later. I know it was 3 minutes because she never returns a text before an hour after. Like, I've never received a text back from her within the first hour I've sent the text. So, and she sent it to me, and she said, "Oh, you mean the guys where this, and this happens?" I said, "Yeah." She goes, "No, why would you watch that? It's depressing." I'm like, "Well, it's a good movie. I mean, you know what you're getting into. You're watching a movie about firefighters, so." That was my proof that there are people out there who know exactly what happened to these guys in the severity of the situation and how it was. It's almost like the scene in the Alamo when and then in the Alamo, when he sends the commander, Travis sends a young boy out as a rider to go find help, and when the rider comes back, the Alamo has fallen, and they're all dead. It's very similar here. It's, you know, the Miles Teller character acts as the rider sent out, as he's lookout, separated, and he's separated from them. That is the same impact. You know, in the Alamo, in both the film versions I've seen in the Alamo, the kid kneels, takes off his hat because of the severity of what just happened, and he knows the weight of it. And same here, it's just the entire build, the last 30 minutes, you know exactly what's coming, especially if you know historically, but the way the movie is set up, the way that Miles Teller has received his training, you fight the fire and you move back, you fight the fire and you move back, you fight the fire and you move back, and then you keep fighting until you have nowhere to go, and then you deploy, and that's the last ditch effort. You see this, oh man, heartbreaking. But it is a true story. And these guys certainly are heroes.
They really are. They really are.
Can't take that from them. Absolutely.
There, there was one thing from Josh Brolin's character that I thought was really cool, and it was reoccurring throughout the movie. It was the bear on fire, and he describes it as the most beautiful and terrible sight that he's seen, because it did actually happen to him while he was fighting a fire. I'm sure that's just for the film, but still, I thought that was a pretty cool
imagery. Yeah,
yeah, some pretty cool imagery going on. Also, there was the one moment in the movie where I think they're heading for their first fire. You know, with the new recruits, and they see the deer running across the field. Where it's almost, you know, that's life, but then they're about to head into this blazing forest, or not really forest fire, but yeah, this huge fire going on.
Yeah, of course, that's a good parallel there. There's life, and then they see what they're going into, which is death. I mean, that's the deer in the wild, of course, that's life in its rawest form, you know, so, and then they're going into a terrible... By the way, I wonder if this movie was very well timed because of all the forest fire, or all the fires being started out west.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. That's very true. It's definitely something to watch, and I mean, it's obviously it's what's going on now, and with this being a, you know, movie based on something that actually really happened, it really is interesting. It's crazy, man. How do we stop these forest fires? You know, I mean, there's no way we really can.
And they destroy massive amounts of wooded area, and that's just crazy. I mean, I don't know how you do that. I was watching. I mean, I'm sure a lot of what they're doing in this. I'm sure a lot of the actors were given a boot camp and a course to like a 2-week firefighting course of what these guys go through, how they really stop fires. You know, the equipment they use and. The terminology, the quick, if someone says this, you know exactly what to do, that kind of terminology. I was watching it like, man, how are they going to stop this fire? But they do have ways to maybe not stop it, but surely slow it down.
They talk about fighting fire with fire, and that's definitely something I've heard that before. When talking about doing forest fires, not extensively, but I've heard that to where that's how they combat the fires. You know, that's how they stop them. Because you know, you can't just grab someone's pool water, which they did in the movie. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, there's this helicopter that comes that lowers this enormous hose and sucks up this guy's pool, and he comes out and he's smiling and giving them a thumbs up, like. Are you kidding me? Put my water back. Put my water back right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Take my water. I mean, it can't be the cheapest thing to replace. Yeah, it's. But I mean, I guess that's the thing out there is if your pool water is needed, you got to give it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, fires just start out of nowhere, apparently. I don't, jeez, that's rough. I was doing a little bit of research and found out that recently there was a fire, and they were able to trace it back to, there was an eagle that had a snake, and the eagle perched itself on a power line, and the power line sparked, and the bird and the snake fell, and the spark was still hot enough that started the fire on the ground.
Oh, God.
Now, that, like, how do you prevent that?
that's a horrible sequence of events.
Yeah, just very unfortunate. How do you prevent that? You just can't prevent it, ever. That's crazy. I want to take the time to, you know, all those people who have lost their homes recently to, you know, a hurricane or natural disaster or a fire out west in Arizona or California. Just take a minute. I mean, those people are in dire need of help. And I watching this movie, I finally, like, saw the enormity of that.
Mm-hmm.
You're shown, obviously it was digital, but you're shown this entire neighborhood that's just been burnt to nothing.
Yeah.
And that's all those people lost their homes. Probably some people lost their lives, maybe some pets. You know, people's, you know, what have been collections of things in the house gone. You know, people lost everything. It's just, the enormity was never like, you'd always hear, oh, there's a hurricane in Louisiana, oh, there's a hurricane south or in Atlanta or something. And you're like, okay, well, you know, whatever, release that effort for it, we'll help them. But, or like one of those fires out west you've been hearing about, I guess actually seeing it visually on screen was like, it brought the enormity of what that was to me.
Yeah. I'm gonna say this. Shout out to the Granite Mountain, the paw shots. Because, you know, at the end of the movie, it gives them their little backstory of how they saved thousands of acres of national forest land. You know,
Especially this big tree.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's a very old tree that exists because of them. It is alive right now because of them. So that's always, yeah. I mean, it's this 2,000 movie is
year old
yeah.
tree. I think
this movie is definitely a testament. A testament to the bravery of those men, those young men, and obviously they are. There's a line one of the nurses says to the guys is they're in the hospital looking after one of their friends who's just been bitten by a snake. She says she looks at obviously you, well oddly enough you brought up earlier Taylor Kitsch's character Mackenzie, who's kind of a womanizer. Like this nurse looks at him. No, he's not a womanizer. He just goes through him a lot easily. He just he sleeps him, throws him away. And this nurse says, you guys are all heroes. And of course, that's the one. And then as the movie goes on, he talks about how, like, no, guys, this is the one, this nurse. He says, I'm in love with her. And like, apparently there's like, she says that line and then that's the one there's a big, you know, the movie's, hey, these guys are heroes hitting you over the head with it. But, you know, I'm okay with it because they deserve to be hit over the head with it. So.
Yeah, I definitely would. It was, this movie was what, 2 hours and I think 2 hours and 14 minutes long. That's the official runtime they have on IMDb. But I would definitely watch it again.
Yeah, then the last one we talked about, Geostorm and Only the Brave both passed the Netflix test. I think.
Yeah.
At least for me, they both passed the Netflix test. But then again, I'm one of those poor saps that falls for the emotional center of a movie every time. If it's there, I fall for it every time. This week's Clark Hayes. The Clark Hayes is a movie you should probably watch and or be able to reference. Sunshine, 2007, Danny Boyle directed it. Cillian Murphy, Cliff Curtis, Michelle Yeoh, Rose Byrne, Chris Evans, Troy Garrity, and Mark Strong. The sun has failed the earth, and it is in a forever winter. Icarus One, the first ship and its team sent to restart the sun, have lost contact, and they are assumed to be lost. Sunshine is a story of Icarus 2 and her crew as they try to reignite the sun and bring the Earth out of a forever perpetual winter. Reasons. Number one, the score. This might be John Murphy's best work. It might be one of the most powerful scores I've ever heard. I mean, and that's going back to Chariots of Fire. It's going back to all those movies that can be placed in the Golden Age of Hollywood that have wonderful scores. This is as powerful. I mean, maybe not as powerful, but it's damn close to as powerful. I love the cinematography in this movie. It's It utilizes the enormity of the space they're in to that he frames everything with the space they're in the spacecraft to tell the story through the shots. And I love the use of color. Everything is a very either very vivid or very dull color for a reason. You know, the golden spacesuits, or the when they're looking out at the sun, this brilliantly bright yellow orange sun. And then when they put the curtains down, it's completely black. It's, you know, colors being played with here, and I love it. It goes right along with cinematography. And the scene that I think is wonderful is the ending, the very slow build, Kappa's journey. This movie talks about angels and demons, and then you're asked later who is an angel and who is a demon, and Kappa, Killian Murphy's, he's the main character, and his as he's outracing time, the person on that has come on their ship in space. Now you're thinking, how'd that happen? Well, watch the movie, figure it out. he's trying to accomplish their mission while someone's trying to stop him. Kappa's journey is this wonderful score by John Murphy, Adagio D minor, that is all awesome. It's just pure power, man. It's just pure emotion. And then I love the message he sent to his sister at the beginning of the movie, you don't see till now. And he tells his sister, you know, if you look up and the sun is shining, then you'll know we made it. You'll know we made it.
That's some powerful stuff right there.
It is. It's wonderful. Sunshine is a damn good movie. It's a movie probably a lot of people didn't see.
I'm going to be honest. This is the first, I think, I probably heard about it when it came out in 2007, but...
It's Danny Boyle. It wasn't wide released. I know that it wasn't wide released. But Danny Boyle also did 28 Days later with Killian Murphy. So if you like 28 Days Later, the kind of the zombie reboot movie... that's the same director and the same star as in this one, so you'll definitely enjoy this one if you enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to our episode. You can find us on Apple iTunes. You can set it to automatically download. We're on Podbean. You can download us there, or Google Play if you're an Android user. Many different ways to listen. Please find one of them you like and listen to us. My name is Grayson Maxwell and can be reached at GraysonMaxwell1. The show can be... Oh, sorry, Nick, you can be reached at...
Ooh, Nmore1776.
Love America. Love America. You can tweet the show at Love Cinema Pod. You can check out the Facebook group. I'm going to start posting the links to the trailers. So after you listen to the episode or before listening to the episode, you can watch the trailer so you can be right along with us if that's your thing. And as always, thank you very much for listening. It's always appreciated, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you.